Hello and welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast. My name is JJ Hodges. That's right, you're here with Four Comic Junkies. The comics aren't enough and you need a little extra fix. Today we are going to be talking about comics and feminism. Today's topic specifically about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and its themes of female empowerment. Buffy's one of my all-time favorite shows. It's so much fun to rewatch. It might have some bad CGI and, you know, but that's okay. It was the 90s. Everybody had bad CGI. All right, my guest today is my good friend Jesse Thorpe. Hello, Jesse.
Hi, JJ. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Major Buffy fan.
Oh, yeah. When did you first start watching the show?
I started watching Buffy about 3 or 4 years ago. I was just starting to really get into Joss Whedon and Dr. Horrible. Mm-hmm. And a buddy of mine told me that I would love Buffy. So I gave it a shot, and he was absolutely right. I just fell in love with the show.
Wow. It was that soon? It was 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was always afraid of vampires and horror. So when it was on TV in the 90s, mm-hmm. I was too scared to watch it.
That's really funny. I didn't realize it was that soon for you.
Yeah.
I remember watching the very end of season 4 because I had a massive crush on Sarah Michelle Gellar, and which still holds today. If you follow her on Instagram, she's gorgeous. But the funny thing was that, like, I was like, oh man, she's really hot. I'm going to watch the show. And I was like, 12 years old. And then I ended up like really just falling in love with it and watching all of season 5 and really just kind of going from there. Although I stopped watching during season 6 because Smallville premiered and they were on competing networks. Because I remember this is really strange. A really fun factoid about Buffy is that the season 5 was on the WB and then season 6 moved to UPN. Mm-hmm. And eventually they came together to be the CW. But either way, the end of season 5, I remember they promoted it as the series finale of Buffy. And I was super bummed. I was like, it's over? And then, season 5. Oh, by the way, spoilers. The show's also been out for like 20 years. So, you've had time. I say that every episode. I'm like, oh, it's been out for a long time. We've got time. But anyway, the season 5 finale, she dies. Mm-hmm. And then when they moved to the other network, they were like, Buffy lives. And I was like, oh, okay. But then Smallville took its spot on the WB. So I watched that instead. So it really wasn't until about 10 years ago I actually saw the entire show all together. Mm-hmm. And really enjoyed it. Now, the show really was very ahead of its time in terms of just, progressiveness. They had an openly gay character, Willow.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about it to me is that it is very much about female empowerment. The main character is literally a very strong woman. But the show was also not afraid, excuse me, to be, what I love about fiction is the first 3 or 4 seasons were very much, or 3 seasons, I should say, very much high school is hell and dealing with problems that we all deal with, but just putting kind of the supernatural over it. So, it's like, oh, you sleep with a guy and he turns out not to be a great guy. Turns out, and that's what happened with Angel.
Right.
And then, even the season 4 premiere, having Buffy, go to college and she's a little out of her element, she meets a vampire that's stronger than her. So that's, so that's really like, that's something I think people can relate to. It's like, oh, I was, the queen bee in high school, and now I'm small fish in right. in a large ocean. And the show really wasn't afraid to deal with stuff like that. And I think that they handled, all the characters the way, Xander not going to college but still finding success, Willow discovering that she's gay, and even like the transitions Buffy made from having to be you know, just wanting to be normal, to, you know, accepting her destiny, to kind of having to be a leader, you know, and then, you know, and then she became a big sister, which really was the most, you know, outrageous storyline. I remember you can't, folks at home, you can't appreciate it nowadays, but what it was like at the end of season 5, episode 1, when, you know, Joyce says, Buffy, take your sister. And they go, Mom, there's just everybody at home, me included, was just like, sister? And I was just like, she doesn't have a sister, does she? I mean, I didn't see all of season 4. Maybe I missed something. And then, you know, mm-hmm. of course, you. But the show, again, being ahead of its time, Joss Whedon being very, he was doing binge-worthy stuff before that was a thing.
Right.
And that's, you know, so what are the standout moments for you when it comes to Buffy?
Oh, wow. I mean, there are a lot of them. The biggest thing for me, actually, in terms of Buffy, I think, is Willow's character arc. If you start at the beginning of season 1 and you get this mousy, shy little girl, mm-hmm. and then you take it to the series finale and you watch the massive transformation of Willow coming into herself, I think that that's one of the most incredible things about the series.
Oh, yeah.
I love that Joss Whedon took the blonde little girl who's always running away in the horror movies and turned her into the hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being a blonde female myself, I love that idea.
Sure.
he just does a really wonderful job creating these incredibly complex characters.
Mm-hmm. And they have very real arcs, too.
They do.
And, you know, and one of the things when I rewatched this show versus when I rewatched a show like Charmed, you know, and no offense to anyone who likes Charmed, is that Charmed, I think, leaned too much into the supernatural, where I didn't feel like their characters had room to grow outside of being witches, whereas I felt like the Buffy characters, they had room to grow outside of being, you know, the Scooby gang,
mm-hmm.
you know, fighting vampires or demons or whatever they were fighting that week. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Willow. My favorite season is actually season 6, which is actually, I guess, most people's least favorite season. But I maybe I just have a thing for, like, darker stuff. Well, you know, I'm a huge Batman fan.
Yeah.
But that, to me, that season felt real, you know, and Willow's journey.
It's such an incredibly visual way to showcase grief.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, in the episode, sorry for the spoiler, when Joyce dies, when Buffy's mother dies,
mm-hmm.
Joss Whedon very specifically put no music into that entire episode.
Right.
So it's just the very raw emotion. You don't hear Dawn's reaction when Buffy tells her that her mother died.
Right.
And that those were all very purposeful choices. And Anya's monologue about not understanding
right.
why Joyce isn't there anymore, that's also the first time that Willow and Tara kiss on screen, which was the first lesbian kiss on network television.
Yes, yes, right.
And he found a very real way to bring that in mm-hmm. to make it less, for lack of a better term, offensive.
Sure.
To a 90s audience that wasn't used to seeing something like that,
right.
where a gay relationship between two women was such a taboo thing to put out there. He really pushed boundaries on that.
Yeah. And that show, that episode is just about perfect, how it shows every single character, how they deal with Joyce's death.
Yes. And it's still hard for me to watch.
It's for me as well. When my mom died, I didn't have a reaction. You know, my sister called me and said, you know, she's in tears, like, you know, mom's gone. And I just kind of, I just was numb. I was just like, oh, okay. I didn't really know how to process it. And she's crying. And all I could think was like, you know, I don't think I've ever heard her cry before. Huh, that's weird. I mean, I've seen her cry a couple times. And that was just all I could think. And it really wasn't until later that I just lost it and just, you know, was just a mess on the floor. And I think that that's, you know, in that episode, it is hard to watch because it's real.
Yes.
You know, despite being, you know, science fiction or fantasy, whatever you want to call it, there's reality to that. And my mom also had a lot of issues, and it's hard for me to watch that season because Joyce was going had like I don't want to call it a psychotic break, but sort of, you know, she, I don't know, the medicine or whatever, the tumor she had, whatever it was messing with her mind. My mom was a little bit like that. And that was, and so I actually, it was a couple years ago, I was rewatching the show and I had to skip that episode. I was like, I can't watch this one. It hits too close to home, which again, says a lot about Joss Whedon. Now, granted, my mom did not get attacked by some like alien slug thing.
That thing was so gross.
It is. And that's another reason I can't watch that, because despite, you know, sometimes the goofy costumes and makeup and stuff, there's once in a while they get it right and it looks creepy and scary.
Yeah.
I always thought the vampire makeup was really good. But anyway, the show did feel very real, and there's a lot to, you know, and then it does speak to Joss Whedon's brilliance about just bringing in reality to it. Like, sure, it's about, you know, this girl that fights vampires. It's like, that's not real. But her struggles, you know, are very real.
Right.
And that's very... And, you know, I think it would, I'd go so far as to say it was the first show that wasn't, maybe not the first show, but a big mainstream show, a popular show that wasn't afraid to push the envelope that way. And another thing that the show did very, very well was really the episodes could be anything they wanted it to be. You know, I mean, the musical episode is a great example.
That is one of the first TV musical episodes that was ever done, and Joss Whedon decided to do it because James Marsters and Rupert Grint, Giles.
Anthony Stewart Head,
that's right.
It's Rupert Giles.
Rupert Giles. I mixed up my Harry Potter and my Buffy.
Yeah, that's all right. We all do that.
They were both innately musical.
Yeah.
And so he decided to capitalize on that, mm-hmm. and didn't have anybody... You know, none of the voices were dubbed in. It was everybody genuinely singing. And that's one of the first times where you really get a sense of Tara.
Oh, yeah.
Which a lot of people really appreciated.
And I had no idea she was so talented. But it's funny because you see Xander, and like, he doesn't have a great voice, but he goes for it, you know.
He was consistently entertaining.
Yeah.
Which... You know, everybody wants a Xander. He was like the Chandler of their group. Everybody wants one of those guys around.
That's a good one. I didn't think of that. That's funny. But yeah, he definitely is, because he's so, and his arc, you know, he had a very real arc too. Like,
absolutely.
Not wanting to go to college, being stuck at home and struggling to find work, you know, was his kind of season four arc before he kind of settled into construction.
And then with Anya.
Oh yeah, yeah. And one of my favorite Xander moments is when Buffy and Riley are about to break up, and Buffy calls Xander out saying, you know, Anya follows you around like a lovesick puppy, and that's the only reason you keep her around. She says something like that. And then at the end of the episode, Riley leaves Buffy, but you see Xander go to Anya and he says, I'm crazy in love with you. I get excited when I'm about to see you. And it's a very sweet moment because you see that there is love there. It's not just the lovesick puppy. It's like, no, he really loves her and appreciates her.
Right.
And that's...
He gets her.
Yeah. And he has endless amounts of patience for her that I definitely wouldn't have had.
No.
You know, and again, speaking about the show, just doing different things, another favorite episode of mine... besides the musical episode, is I don't remember the name of it, but I think it's called The Wish. It's Anya's first episode, actually.
Yes.
When
the alternate reality.
Yeah, you know, and
I actually just watched that one recently.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so like, it's creepy at first because you don't really know what's going on.
Right.
And again, that episode or that show being very unafraid to, you know, surprise the audience. You know, you think that Cordelia is the one that can fix everything. She's the one that can solve it and change history back.
And then she dies.
Yeah. It's, I mean, remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And but it wasn't just a one-off either, because they brought that Willow back.
Doppelgangerland.
Yeah.
Which is great. And it's also one of the first times that they really play with that alternate dimension in Buffy. Because, I mean, Angel gets sent to some sort of hell dimension when Buffy kills him. Sorry for the spoiler.
Yeah.
But, you know, they play a lot with alternative dimensions, and they think that he took that a lot further in Angel, the spinoff.
Yeah.
But he did a really good job of laying the groundwork in Buffy.
I confess to not having seen all of Angel. That was another one I did watch because it was led in by Buffy.
Right.
But Angel, for whatever reason, stayed on the WB and Buffy moved, which the silly thing about that was that it was harder for them to do crossovers because they were on different networks.
Right.
Despite, I think, literally filming probably a mile away from each other in real life. But but Angel, you know, could carry his own show, and he was a great character.
Yes.
And that was another one where they built him up, you know, when you just think he's this mystery guy helping Buffy out, and then it turns out he's a vampire. It turns out he's a vampire with a soul. And then, you know, turns out when he was a vampire, he was one of the worst vampires that ever existed. So he had a really complicated arc, and that says a lot about Buffy's character to kind of take all that in and accept him and love him despite all that. Which I think, you know, we all need that. We all, you know, we all have a history. We all have things we've done we're not proud of. You know, it's not like we caused, like, mass riots in London in the 1600s or anything. At least not that I'm aware of. Maybe in a past life. I don't know. You know? I never liked London. No, I'm kidding. But you know, the show, again, just... and another character, probably my favorite character on the show is Spike. He had, I think, the strangest arc, and it was
absolutely.
It was one of those where it came from the. I think it came from the fans just being like, "Hey, this is a cool character. We like him. We want him back," and they started just writing him in more episodes, because he was just supposed to be a one-off villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he's in a couple episodes. He's this cool, you know, tough guy vampire, and then he is with Drusilla, and then all the stuff with Angel happens, and he leaves, and he comes back for one episode in season 3 when Drusilla dumps him, and he's all heartbroken over that, and Buffy and Angel have to kind of help him deal with that, and that's another episode. It's so strange, you know, but then in season 4 he becomes a regular. He gets the chip in his head, and he ends up having, the only thing he can do is fight demons, because he can't hurt humans, which is, and then he falls in love with Buffy, and all that goes on. What a, man, I'm like.
And then he gets his own soul.
Yeah, he gets his soul back, which drives him crazy.
To be worthy of her, and he goes just completely insane.
Yeah, and again, and it's funny, you know, we're talking about it, because there's reality to all of it.
Absolutely. And you have to wonder if Joss Whedon was actually planning that big of an arc for Spike when he first wrote him in.
I'm not sure. You know, I really...
Because I don't know.
I think, you know, a lot of times it ends up being... sometimes these characters, they just become fan favorites, just kind of out of nowhere. And it surprises writers. I've read stories about characters like that. Spike might have been one of them. I think so, but I could be wrong. But he had such a great arc, you know. And when he when I was rewatching the show, when he is in love with Buffy and he's kind of trying to impress her, it's just so sweet. And he does it in such a, you know, a bass ackwards way. It's just so funny, you know. I was thinking about the one moment. I think it's when the troll shows up or whatever, that Anya, you know, that she had cursed years ago.
Right.
And, you know, he, like, destroys the...
The bronze.
The bronze, yeah. I couldn't remember the name of the club. So he destroys the bronze, and Spike is helping some woman, and he's like... And Buffy's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm making her more comfortable." He's like, "And I'm not gonna bite her. You know, I know you wouldn't like it." She's like, "You want credit for not attacking a human?" And he's like... yeah.
Not attacking a disaster victim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah.
He's like, well, yeah.
And then she's like, ugh, and runs away. And he's like, what does it take?
Yeah.
And I was just, and I just remember being a kid, and you rewatching it now, I had like flashbacks to me as a kid in love with some girl going, oh, what do I have to do? And it's just like, you know, someone who's, I don't want to say out of your league, because I think that's a silly term, but like just someone who's not interested, how do you get them interested? And it's just like, so what do I have to do? You know? Oh man. I love Spike so much.
Yeah. I like that it didn't go the direction of Buffy falling in love with Spike, because it would have been so easy, but to keep their relationship raw and animalistic and complicated, because there was a great chemistry between the two of them, mm-hmm. but the idea of them as a couple just didn't quite work out.
Right.
Logically.
No, it didn't. And that was true of their characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Buffy having gone through the trauma of dying and coming back, and he was sort of the only person that could understand that.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, season six being one of my favorites, you know, them having that toxic relationship with each other, because they were toxic to each other.
Absolutely.
So, you know, she wasn't like a victim there, and neither was he, because it's like he's letting her take advantage, and he knows it, but he didn't care.
And she just wants to feel something after coming back from being dead.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about the musical episode, Once More with Feeling, because mm-hmm. usually they're just kind of a standalone episode and they don't advance plot at all.
Right.
Whereas in Once More with Feeling, the Scooby Gang finds out that they pulled Buffy out of heaven when they brought her back to life, because they thought she was in some sort of hell dimension after yeah. she died. And so that comes out, and that's the first time Spike and Buffy kiss.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool the way that he was able to advance the plot by using something like a musical episode that hadn't really been done before. It's just another way he really pushed the envelope with that.
Yeah, yeah. First and foremost, the songs are very catchy.
I listen to it in my car so often.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
I do the same thing. I listen to it often. They're catchy. They're fun. I wish they were on karaoke lists, and they're not, because I've looked. My friends and I go to karaoke. I'm like, I would totally get up there and rock some Rest in Peace.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be so much fun. And again, the musical episode still being true to the characters and not, it doesn't feel off. When the show would do like a goofier episode where it was more comedic, or a very horror centric episode, it never felt off. It always felt like, yeah, this works. It just, for whatever reason, you just accepted it with Buffy.
Right.
And the show was very progressive in that way, that it could do anything and still feel like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, I can't really think of an episode where I was like, that felt weird, I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was some, I mean, season one was a shorter season, and sure, they're finding their footing, they don't really quite know what the show is yet. So that's my least favorite season, but I still can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, season six, I know it gets a lot of flack for being so dark, but I don't know. I really was like, I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, Willow's addiction to magic being kind of a, you know, an allegory for drug use.
Yeah. I think that that's the thing that a lot of people don't like as much, just how far they took that.
Yeah. But there's reality to that.
Absolutely.
Where your sweet, innocent friend succumbs to something awful. And it is sad, and it hits close to home for a lot of people, I'm sure. Like, I don't, you know, like we were talking about the death episode, because there's truth to it. But when Tara gets shot, it just kills us all, because Tara was such a great character, who I kind of didn't get at first. I was like, what's the, like, what's Tara's purpose here? But then she earned her place in the Scooby Gang, as opposed to just being Willow's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were talking about earlier, all the characters being well-rounded. She earned a spot there.
Right.
And they all, like her episode with her family, and they're like, oh, you're a demon and you need to come home with us. Which actually has Amy Adams in it.
Yeah.
That was like one of her first acting gigs. That it's such a, it's such a powerful episode where it's like, you know, you have your family that tells you you're one thing, and then your friends that are telling you, no, we want you to be you. And that, you know, and again, there's truth to that. You know, I'm sure we all know somebody in our lives that has had a hard upbringing. I have an ex-girlfriend actually that her parents were very, very strict and very controlling. And I met up with her a couple months ago, and I told her, I was like, you seem so much more comfortable in your skin than you ever have. And she's embraced a whole lifestyle for herself that I was just, I told her, I was like, I'm very proud of you. You know, you've kind of gotten away from them. She still has a good relationship with her parents, but she was able to get away from them and say, you tried to make me this, but I'm actually this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like Tara, which I'm realizing as I'm saying it. So kudos to her for that. but the show, you know, having a strong female lead, it's funny because I think in the 90s, in the late 90s, even the early 2000s, people didn't think much of it. It was just like, if it was a good show, people were going to watch it. Whereas nowadays, it would be called progressive and, wow, look at the strong woman, you know, pushing this feminist agenda. But I don't think Buffy was trying to do that. I don't, you know, I think it did do that, but it didn't throw it in the audience's face, you know what right. I mean? It wasn't ever preachy. It was very just, you know, and I think that's a, but I think that's a good message for, you know, young women, obviously, and young men, to see strong women and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when, you know, I think about this a lot, the word feminism can seem toxic to some people, mostly men, obviously. And it bothers me because it's like, why do women need feminism, especially in America? I'm like, they need it because, you know, women feel marginalized. They feel like they're not appreciated or accepted, you know. I'm sure you felt that way in your life.
Absolutely.
And so there's truth to that, where it's fine to have these shows that, you know, like Buffy, that isn't afraid to just say, here's a strong character who's a woman and she's going to kick everybody's butt. And I always loved that Buffy, as a show and as a character, wasn't afraid to be strong, and then also wasn't afraid to be vulnerable, which again is a very important message for the audience to learn. Like, you can be strong, you know, you're the slayer, you have to win every battle, but sometimes the battles take their toll. And it's a very, real message for people to accept. And I mean, I love it. And the show just, it resonated with me as a kid. You know, what started as just like my crush on Sarah Michelle Gellar turned into, you know, wow, this show is, it means something.
Absolutely.
And it just, I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit, because I feel like I've been talking for like 3 hours.
No, there's something really great about finding a show like Buffy that, you know, Joss Whedon had a very specific idea of taking, like I said, the blonde little girl who's always the first one to get killed in a horror movie and saying, what if we make her the hero?
Yeah.
And one thing that I notice a lot when I go back and watch early episodes with Buffy and Angel during especially Buffy's high school years,
mm-hmm.
how often Buffy ends up saving him.
Yeah.
Dragging him out of places, you know, taking care of him. And you don't usually see that. Women were often seen being the ones that had to be rescued and taken care of. And to find a strong female character that says, I can take care of you and I can take care of myself and then I can go save the world and I can do whatever else I have to do. It's a good message.
Yeah.
Because she's a very well-rounded character. And like you said, with the vulnerability, I actually just watched The Prom, the episode where Angel breaks up with Buffy because they have come to the they've come to the harsh realization that there's really no future for the two of them. And watching Buffy fall apart and being able to say, you know, he was right, and I know that he was right. Right now I'm just trying to breathe.
Yeah.
Is just such a real profound way to showcase heartbreak.
Oh yeah. And you know, the dogs at the prom, that's real too. Well, I mean, maybe not really, but you know, what they did well in the show that a lot of great fiction shows do is there's a similar arc. You know, you're talking about that episode between the hero and the villain in that episode being Tucker. Right. I had to think about it for a second because I was like, what did they always call Andrew, right? Tucker's brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was introduced. So he's Tucker's brother. Oh.
Andrew, yeah.
Yeah. He was also a great character. But you know, Buffy having to kind of take that heartbreak and, you know, move on with it, whereas he had a heartbreak and he was just going to take it out on everyone.
Right.
And, you know, and the show did, you know, another great character is Jonathan, you know, what an arc he had.
Yeah.
From being kind of just the dorky kid that everybody picked on to, you know, I don't know, there was the episode with where he had the gun, and Buffy had the telepathy, mm-hmm. she thought he was gonna kill everybody, but then it was just like, no, I came here to kill myself, and then he comes back and has like rewritten the world to be so yeah. he's like the master of the world or whatever, mm-hmm. And then when he came back in season 6, his arc of being
part of the trio.
Yeah. But he was always kind of the most innocent one. He didn't really want to hurt anybody.
Right.
He just kind of wanted to be noticed.
He wanted to belong.
Right. And I think my favorite moment with him is in season 7 when he and Andrew come back to Sunnydale and he says, we're here to save everybody. And Andrew kind of shoots him down, like, you know, they don't care about you. And he says, well, I care about them. And so he had a great arc. Mm-hmm. And that made me really happy. And that actor, I can't remember his name right now, but he does a lot of, like, writing and directing now. So he's had a very successful career. And again, even a side character like that could have a great arc,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there's a lot of reality to him, too, you know, being that kind of the nerdy kid that grew up and, you know,
was always kind of overlooked.
Yeah. And sure, he was marginalized the same way that Warren and Andrew felt, but he ended up just going, it doesn't matter, you know, like the world's too big for all that.
Yeah.
Whereas it took Andrew a lot longer to realize that. And Andrew's character, actually in the comic books that follow the season 8, 9, 10 comics that have come out since, I think it was season 9, if I remember right, he finally opened up and said he was gay, which, you know, we all knew.
Right.
but it took him a long time, which again is, you know, another real thing. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's obvious to everybody, and it's probably obvious to him, but he just can't say it, he can't admit it. I think we all know somebody like that in our lives where it's like, oh, you know, there's some secret about them, whether they're gay or bisexual or whatever they're, you know, or, you know, a transgender situation, you know, that they don't feel quite right in their body and they don't understand it. And maybe other people do, but with the help of their friends, they can go, okay, now I understand. I'm like realizing, I'm like excited now talking about it. Like, wow, these characters were great, you know?
Well, one interesting thing, I've done a fair amount of reading about Buffy as well and like following Facebook groups and stuff on Instagram. And one thing that's frequently asked is who they think the worst of the big bads were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Warren.
Yeah.
And I think it was Warren because Warren was human.
Yeah.
Warren had a soul. And the things that he did to kind of make up for, you know, we talk about Jonathan, how he felt marginalized and overlooked, and the way that he still had that good, warm heart, as opposed to Warren, who just...
He just ignored his heart.
He just kind of went a little postal.
Oh, yeah.
To be perfectly honest, you know, with creating the female robot and then the mind control device to get his ex-girlfriend back and then killing his ex-girlfriend and making Buffy believe that she was the one who did it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he deserved to get skinned by Willow the way that he did, but...
Well...
I mean, he... Because, you know, he is the one who shot Tara and he shot Buffy as well.
Yeah.
But just seeing... Because there were some really terrible characters. You know, Glory was a god who tried to, you know, bring forth the apocalypse. And all of these people, all of the other big bads are trying to bring forth the apocalypse. Warren never tried to bring forth the apocalypse. Yeah. Warren was just a hurting human being.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about that, you know, you say that, it's like you could almost make a case that the other big bads weren't that bad. It's like, sure, they wanted to, you know, destroy the world or whatever. But it's like, all, you know, Angel, you just, when he turned into Angelus, it's just, you know, he's just a vampire. He's evil. He has no soul at
He had no soul. The Master had no soul. Yeah. Angelus had no soul.
Yeah. And Glory just wanted to go home. The apocalypse was just, you know, well, too bad. I'm going home.
Then you have the first evil.
Yeah.
With, you know, obviously trying to bring forth the apocalypse.
Right. And that was a I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that particular villain because they couldn't really do anything other than just sort of... I guess the scary thing about that character is they could be the voice in your ear that tells you to do bad things.
Right.
Which is obviously what happened, like, with Andrew, and he tries to do it to Buffy.
It's everybody's inner demon.
Yeah. So, and that's really scary about that. I agree with you there that Warren is definitely the worst because he's just a bad guy, you know. He had chances to redeem himself. He had chances to stop what he was doing, and he didn't. I will say that one of my favorite moments in Buffy is the robot girlfriend episode, just because I think it's one of the funniest episodes when Spike, you know, the girl's like, I'm looking for Warren. Has anyone found Warren? And
Spike hits on her.
Yeah, and then she throws him out the window, and Buffy's like, he's like, okay, you know, you're hurting people. Well, nobody cares about Spike. But you know, she says it later, like, Warren's like, did she hurt anybody? And she's like, no. Well, no one important. I think one of my favorite shots in Buffy is, he's like, you don't understand. There's something I need to tell you about her. And the camera zooms in. He's like, she's a robot. And Buffy's like, yeah.
Duh.
And it's just, you think, and again, the show being, you know, very clever in that way that it could subvert your expectations. Like, oh, she's not a robot. She's something else. Oh, she's a robot. Oh, right. Okay. And I think that bringing Warren back and having him be this really bad guy, you know, just where it's like they start the trio just sort of like fun. Like, oh, you guys want to get together and take over Sunnydale? And then they sort of... And when they torment Buffy at first, it's just more annoying than anything.
Yeah.
And then it turns into, like, no, they find a way to really, especially him, like, he gets under her skin and starts hurting people. And, yeah, oh, go ahead.
Well, Warren was the one who seemed to be the most bent on really obtaining power.
Yeah.
And... I mean, any guy who's going to create himself a gorgeous female robot girlfriend, you know, he's been rejected a fair number of times and is really just looking for power. And, you know, he had Jonathan and Andrew as kind of his lackeys, his sidekicks. And they were never really, they didn't really seem to have that same draw to evil that Warren did. And I think that it's a really... profound way to show how people respond differently to marginalization.
Yeah. They were more about mischief,
I guess. The science and the fun. You know, they were three nerdy guys who didn't get a date in high school, and kind of how they all took it out differently.
Right. And Andrew being more, especially, you know, as you find out throughout the season, was kind of only doing it because he was in love with Warren.
Right.
And, you know, whereas Jonathan was doing it sort of because he felt like he was in too deep and then couldn't get out, but then, you know, found a way to redeem himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in talking about Jonathan being such a great character, when in the episode you talked about when Warren kills his ex-girlfriend and they make Buffy think she did it, he says that to Warren later, that they're like, okay, so what do we do now? And he said, well, Light's so young, we can go kill someone else. It's just like, and Warren's just like, shut up, Jonathan, or whatever. And it's just, you know, like, he had a conscience. He felt bad about what they were doing.
Right.
But he also felt like he couldn't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think at the end of that season, it really does come to a head with Willow. Just, she was trying so hard to be good, trying so hard to not let all this stuff get to her. And then when Tara dies, it's just like, screw it. Nope. I'm like, I have this power. I'm going to use it. And that's that. And then we get Giles in his most badass moment. You know, I'd like to test that theory.
Gotta love those moments with Giles.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because he went from being kind of the guy, and they joke about it on the show, like he always got knocked out, to being like, oh, no, he was, when he was a kid, he was like,
bad.
Yeah, he was a terrible person.
Yeah.
Like when all the adults turn into their teenage selves.
Yes.
I think, and those actors played those roles so well.
They really did. Yeah. The acting is very good.
Yeah.
Consistently.
Yeah. And I always loved Giles as a character, and I was sad when he left. But when he came back, it was always special for me.
It was. You know, one character we haven't touched on who I really love and I feel like doesn't get enough credit because Tara comes along is Oz.
Oz, yeah, yeah. It's easy to forget about Oz, which is unfortunate because he did have a great arc. I remember when I was a kid reading, there was an Oz like miniseries comic that tied into the show that dealt with more of his, like when he left in season 4, it was that arc, like when he found like peace with his, you know, werewolf self.
Yeah.
Which again, in talking about like the bad 90s makeup and stuff, the werewolf stuff, I don't think they ever quite figured out.
No.
Because the first episode is very like Halloween costume-ish, and then it got better. And I don't think it was ever Seth Green in the costume. But, like, when they would just put kind of the makeup on Seth Green, and he had, like, the black eyes and the teeth, and he was a little hairier, I was like, that looks fine. Just do that, you know? And then when he would, like, turn into, like, you know, the Shaggy Man, I was like, all right, well. But no, you're absolutely right. He did have a great arc, too, where he was just a very quiet person. And I could relate to him being the guy that's, like, you know, when Cordelia and Willow walk by, he looks at Willow and goes, who's that? Wow, she's beautiful. And I remember thinking that when I was a kid, like my first girlfriend, you know, wasn't, I'm gonna say this nicely. She was a little bit nerdier. She was a tomboy. But I just remember like talking to her and being like, wow, like she's cool. I like this, you know? And we got along really well. As opposed to, you know, going into, you know, like looking after like the tall, pretty blonde, which, you know, there were plenty of. But so I got that with his character and I was like, oh, that's so sweet.
He had a beautiful, innocent love for Willow and really was integral to her character development because Willow was, you know, the mousy, nerdy girl.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this guy who comes along who just falls madly in love with her exactly as she was.
And he was a cool guy, too.
Like, he was a very cool guy.
He was very respected in the school. He was a musician, and he was kind of quiet, mysterious type. And I think that helped her character. Like, I'm noticed by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And which, you know, in turn, Willow could do for Tara. And that was what her whole song is about in the musical episode. You know, she says it right up, like, the only reason anybody notices me is because I'm with you. And I think Oz did that for Willow, you know, very much like, you know, it was, I don't think it was ever said, but, you know, I'm kind of realizing it as I'm saying it, like, wow, yeah. Those are great arcs. And when Oz came back and Willow was starting to feel like, I think that was the, he left like four, like 5 or 6 episodes into season 4.
Right.
And came back a few episodes later. I think one of the great things that they did with that show was that episode, Willow starts to realize she's gay and she's in love with Tara. And Tara realizes that she's in love with Willow. Mm-hmm. And Oz gets upset and he looks at Tara and he says, are you in love with her? And it wasn't, and there's a jealousy to that, but it's not, and it's a totally understandable jealousy, but it's not like an anger, like, wait a minute, you're a girl, you know, like, what's going on here? It was just like a real reaction, like.
He turned into the werewolf.
Yeah. But it wasn't, but he didn't turn into a werewolf.
It wasn't a violent reaction. Yeah. It was a human pained reaction.
Yes, yes. That's what I was getting at. You said it perfectly. Jessie's also a therapist, so she knows. She has a better way with words than I do. You'll hear me go, and that a lot. And Jessie will go, and that was human pain manifesting as a werewolf. But yes, it did. But I think... But again, there's a couple of good moments with Oz when they find out he's a werewolf, and Willow says, "Well, 3 days out of the month, I'm not so much fun to be around either," which is hilarious. But then later in that same episode, when Oz comes back, Riley finds out that he's a werewolf, and he's like, "I can't believe, you know, Willow would be with somebody so dangerous," and Buffy's like, "You're such a bigot. You know, you don't even know him." And having that kind of violent side that Oz can't really control, and he went to great lengths to find a way to control it. Again, you know, you say he's a great character, and you're absolutely right, because that's a real thing, too. Like, I have this violent side to me that I don't like. I need to find a way to fix it. And because he had a great arc where he kind of gave into it and cheated on Willow,
mm-hmm.
and then... you know, with the other werewolf lady,
right?
Who just totally embraced that lifestyle, whereas he was like, "I don't like this. I don't want it." And that's something that, you know, I think we can all relate to. I can definitely relate to that. Just like there's an angry side to me that I don't like, and I want to find a way to control it. You know, and I've been in therapy for a long time, and it's been an immense help, you know, in my personal life. And just finding, you know, and I think that comic, I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember him going and having to learn how to control it, because that episode he says, "Look," and it's the full moon and he's not a werewolf, and she's like, "You know, you found a way to control it." He's like, "Yeah, you know, and I wanted to come back," but then everybody had kind of moved on without him, so he left, which was sad because I did like him a lot.
Well, he moved on to a lot of other stuff too.
Yeah, you know, Seth Green's doing all right for himself.
I'd say so.
But yeah, so we have a few minutes left here. Any final thoughts on Buffy? I mean, there's never any final thoughts.
No, I mean, there's so many characters that we didn't even touch on.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah, so at the beginning, the story that we were going to be comics and feminism, we just ended up, we talked a little bit about it, but.
Well, then let's touch on, you know, the comics and feminism, so, you know, yeah. The beautiful way that Joss Whedon took characters like Buffy and Willow,
mm-hmm.
who at first glance, even the opening of the first episode of Buffy,
mm-hmm.
you've got this little blonde girl in her little Catholic schoolgirl uniform and a guy like getting her to sneak into Sunnydale High School.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, I don't know if we should be here." And he's like, "Oh, come on, it'll be fine." And then before the opening credits come up, she turns into a vampire and bites him.
Yeah, she's the monster. Yeah.
She's the monster. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just such a beautiful way of opening up this entire series of, it's going to defy your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to put women in the position of being the strong ones, the ones in control.
Yeah, absolutely. And the show was all about, you know, when I think about feminism, I think of it as being women being equal to men, which is what true feminism really is about. And that's what Buffy did very, very well, was never showing, it was never showing the men as weak and the women as strong. It was showing them all as weak and strong.
Right.
So there was, because you could have Angel having vulnerable moments, having Spike having vulnerable moments, and And, you know, of course, Buffy having her vulnerable moments. One of my favorite, absolute favorite moments, and I think it's one of Sarah Michelle Gellar's best acting moments, is when she confesses to Tara that she's been sleeping with Spike. And she's like, well, that's okay. You know, like, Tara doesn't really know how to react. And Buffy says, no, it's not okay. I'm using him. And she starts crying and she says, please don't forgive me. I burst out into tears watching that the first time I ever saw it. You know, I was like 22 at the time. And I was just like, I get that. Oh my God, that means something to me. Like the line, don't forgive me. I've said that and I cried. And I'm like tearing up thinking about it actually. Because it's, and then in the next episode, Tara says, how are you doing? And Buffy says, oh, I'm doing a lot better. So you could see that the characters are, that they learn and they grow, and which they all did throughout the show, which is surprisingly rare for television.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times it's like, wow, these characters have these great arcs. A good example being, I think Barney from How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm. I love that show.
He had a great arc, but then I think that they kind of ruined it in the final season.
Well, they ruined everything in the final season.
They really did. And that bothered me a lot because I'm like, I felt like this character was growing and learning and becoming a better person, and then he, you know, that's a whole topic for another day. But with Buffy, those characters, you know, they could be vulnerable and feel real, and then they could be badass and strong. You know, every one of them had a great moment like that. At least, you know, obviously more than one. But Buffy being a very strong character, but also a very real character, is, I think, oh my gosh, I just realized we never even talked about Faith. That was another great character. but she also had a great arc. You know, her having to kind of, she kind of embraced, like, the cool, sexy side of things, yeah, of being a slayer, and Buffy was sort of drawn into that, and then Faith took it too far.
It was kind of the good versus the bad in the slayer, in being a slayer, and what, yeah, it could mean for you. And actually, Faith's arc continues in Angel,
yeah,
in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and I think one of the best episodes of the show, and when talking about these characters being real and growing, is the episode where Faith switches bodies with Buffy.
Yes.
And Faith...
Great acting on both of their parts in that, too.
100%. And because they both were very much like, okay, yeah, they're playing those parts very, very well.
They did, absolutely.
Which is hard to do. And Faith, the line she keeps saying, because it's wrong, she says it, I think three times in the episode. And each time, it means something different to her. And when the last time when she says it, because it's wrong, she wants to fight those vampires, and then, you know, Buffy Faith comes in, and Faith just beats the crap out of her, like, I hate you, I, you know, you're disgusting, and it's just like, and I remember watching that and just going, what a wonderful representation of everyone's inner struggle, you know, of just wanting to just beat the crap out of yourself, and there's tragedy there, and then Faith could grow into a strong character, and she comes back and helps lead as a great you know, leader. you know, lack of a better word. Again, I'm not the one with the words, you know, and there's another very real female character that could, you know, be very strong and sexy. But it was sort of all just a mask for her insecurities.
Her incredible fear of letting anybody get too close.
Yeah, absolutely. And Buffy being you know, a way to help her, you know, realize that it's okay to be strong and be confident and also be vulnerable. And that, you know, and the show did that very, very well. You know, mm-hmm. said that multiple times. And I really can't say it enough because, you know, Buffy as a character, I could relate to. I could see parts of myself in her, where it's just like, I get it. She's a lovely person, and it's nice to have that. To have, you know, and there's some. You could almost be like, oh well, you know, that's a girl character though. It's like, yeah, but she's a great character. And I could relate to that. And I love her. And the show means a lot to me.
I think it's a really amazing thing, too, that these were such incredible supernatural characters, and they're still incredibly relatable. And actually, thinking of the supernatural, there's a very beautiful moment between Xander and Dawn, mm-hmm. where Xander, when it's in season 7 and all the potentials are around, and Xander is telling Dawn how, you know, they don't realize how hard it is to be the one who's left behind.
Yeah, yeah.
And to find a place for yourself among all of the supernatural, mm-hmm. to be that person where you know that you belong, but you don't feel special.
Right.
You don't have that thing that sets you apart. And then it's, you know, Dawn says, well, maybe that's what makes you special. You see things. And then the first pokes his eye out. And yeah. he makes all the pirate jokes.
But he doesn't have to watch Jaws 3D anymore. So. Which I remember watching with my friends, and it's not a great movie, but it's hilariously bad. So we'll have to watch that one of these days.
Okay.
Well, Jesse, this has been fantastic, you know, chatting Buffy with you, which we've watched Buffy together.
Yes.
We had a little drinking game, which, you know, we still got to rewrite the rules to that.
Yes. it needs further amending.
But
you can find many of them if you just Google it on the internet, by the way. They're everywhere.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the show means a lot to both of us, obviously. And,
absolutely.
And I remember you telling me, you know, like, Buffy's my comfort food. And that touched my heart, because I was like, yeah, that... Because I remember when we first started talking, when we became friends, you were like, I just wish I could meet a guy that likes Buffy. And I was like, I like Buffy, you know? And it was sort of like we started talking about it, and you were like, oh, wow, he actually does like Buffy. So we could talk about it as, you know, as equals, like feminism. So, see how I brought it all around there? It was sort of a shoehorn in there. But it's my podcast. So I can do whatever I want. So, Jesse, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I hope you'll come back. You know, did you have fun today?
I did.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It's always fun to talk about Buffy.
Oh, yeah, of course. So
I feel like we both learned a lot about Buffy. I think we both have a new appreciation for it.
Yeah, it's like, wow, Oz did that for Willow, and Willow did that for Tara. And Buffy's vulnerable, and Faith is awesome. So, all right.
Good summary.
That was the gist of it. Oh, and feminism, I guess. But thanks for listening. We'll see y'all soon. Bye-bye.